AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we are back in the Upside Down for the final season of Stranger Things on Netflix. Splashing blood on the sand in Swords and Sandals series Spartacus House of Usher on MGM+, and cleaning up the waterways with Russell Tovey in The War Between the Land and the Sea on BBC One. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And guess what? Kay's here, and so is Boyd. Hello.
Hello.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
What brings you here today?
In a change of format, Boyd and I are here. Yes.
Yes. As a change of format.
Yeah.
But
how are you, James? You look very excited.
I'm great, and let me tell you why. We had a great Dungeons & Dragons session last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, the developments have been extraordinary. We've gone to Stormwreck Isle. This is where we are at the moment. And Sir John, my character, Sir John DeLuther, has inherited a giant sword that is so utterly humongous. It is called the Cleaver of Righteous Smiting. And it is so big, it's so unwieldy that
Cleaver
you can barely lift it.
Righteous Smugness, what?
Also that,
right,
yeah.
It should be called that.
Yeah. But it's so unfeasibly large that he attacks with disadvantage every time he attacks.
Of course your character's going to have a large sword. You're just ridiculous.
That's right, yeah. He's overcompensating. God. But it was fun. We had a good session.
At least you weren't dressed up as him, were you?
Oh, I can't possibly say. But yeah, we had a good time was had by all.
How long do these sessions go on for?
This one was about 3 hours, just under.
Gosh, that's quite punishing, isn't it?
And it name great. Names, who was involved?
John Nugent, Chris Hewitt,
the
Nick Assemblyan,
and
Helen O'Hara. The Nuge is the dungeon master.
I can see Nugent.
Is he?
Yeah,
yes.
Of course.
He walks the line between hipster, doesn't he, and absolute nerd.
But it was amazing.
Brilliant.
So we had little northern kobolds, we had a Scottish dwarf, and we had some kind of mage who sounded like Werner Herzog. It was extraordinary.
Wow.
Yeah, he gives good dungeon master. Mm.
Well, I mean, like, whatever's happened to you last night, you're looking good on it, James, because you look very excitable and
the giant
smiley.
Sword. Thanks.
Not sure if that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think we can just quit with the references to your giant sword now, please, because I've just consumed something and I don't want to bring it up.
That was an unfortunate segue. Right, anyway, let's move on to what we've been watching. Boydie, do you want to start?
Sure. We're coming on to The War Between the Land and the Sea later.
We will, as part of the review section.
I did host the screening of it this week, hosted the Q&A.
Was it underwater? Did you have it in the middle of the Atlantic?
Were you wearing a snorkel?
Yeah.
Yes, to all those
things. Okay, good. Good.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
How incredible is Gugu Mbatha-Raw in real life? Is she beautiful?
Incredible.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. This is what I was going to say, because obviously everyone knows, I know Russell Tovey, he's the lead
actor. Close personal friend.
Close personal
Both
friend.
The Russells, in fact.
Both the Russell, Russell T. Davis, the creator and writer.
And I think it's fair to say, unofficial co-host of this podcast.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
Pretty much. Yeah. I'm still now. We communicate whenever we communicate. Russell T and me. We use the butterfly emoji because it all started with the butterfly review.
That's right.
In our live show,
yeah.
Which he brilliantly scuppered / enabled hilarity to ensue. And yeah, we're keeping up the joke of the butterfly.
Nice.
It's never going to die. That
like
butterfly
it.
Is going to be
it was a very funny
forever.
Moment.
Yeah.
So, so Russell, the two Russells I know, and Gemma Redgrave was there, who's in the show. She's Kate, the head of UNIT.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get on to discussing, but she's an absolute legend. She's brilliant. But Gugu was there, and she is... Looks incredible, unbelievable.
So superficial, Boydie.
But also, no,
I bought
that was
it,
a reaction
I bought it up,
to
I bought
what
it up because I think she's like literally.
Yeah.
I just and like she's obviously a phenomenal actress, but I'm obsessed with her how beautiful she is.
But and, also on top of that, yeah. So on top of that, she's also really, really nice as well. Like incredibly charming and sweet, and unaffected by her because she's a Hollywood star. You know, she's in Surface on Apple TV and, you know, she's been...
Loki, you name it.
Loki, you know, she's so to kind of fit this into her hectic being an American A-lister schedule was pretty amazing. So, yeah, that was the most exciting thing, really.
Wait, she's British, right?
Yeah, yeah, she's British, but she's become a global figure, Kay, in the world of television and film.
Got it.
Thanks. So that was very exciting. And when I got back from that, which was the other night, a couple of nights ago, I thought, what do I want to watch? And the answer was...
Arsenal.
Well, no, the Arsenal I watched last night. I went to see Arsenal last night.
Okay, fine.
Had a lovely dinner first.
Are you smiling? Let's see.
Oh, yeah, we won 3-1. We beat Bayern Munich, who are unbeaten so far this season, Kay. 3-1. I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah. We are on an extraordinary roll of form. We are genuinely being regarded now as the best team.
Sorry, Joe Barton, for bringing
Sorry,
it up.
Sorry, Joe Barton, yeah. I'll be mentioning Joe later in the news section. But I thought, I know, the Beatles anthology. So Disney Plus has revamped, remastered both the audio and the visuals of the Beatles anthology, which was an 8-part documentary that went out in the 90s and basically woke a lot of people up who hadn't heard of the Beatles. I think everyone's heard of them, but haven't really properly listened to and appreciated the Beatles. I mean, I've been a massive Beatles fan since I was about 5.
Day dot,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Boyd was mates with the Beatles.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I would have been. would have been best mate.
Definitely would have been a Beatle.
Yeah,
he would have been the fifth
Beatle. Oh my God, I can see it.
I remember watching it when it first went out. This series, and I bought all of the CDs. The three CD collection of all the unreleased stuff that's on it, and et cetera. But the big draw of this rebooted, remastered version is there's a whole extra episode. So there's a 9th episode, which is made up of, in quotes, material we haven't seen before. Now, it actually turns out, when I watched it, I skipped to this extra new episode. I was like, oh my God, I have to catch up with the new episode because, you know, that's the exciting thing, to see new footage. And what I didn't realise is, but I subsequently have read about, most of it has been seen before, but it's on DVD extras. A lot of it was on the DVD extras of the DVD release of Anthology back in the day. But it does feel new. A lot of it feels new. And all I could go banging on about it for ages, so I won't. But there is footage of this. It all happens after John Lennon died. Obviously, he died in, 1980, I think? But there's footage of the other three, George, who's also subsequently passed away as well. But this is when George and Paul and Ringo got together to kind of discuss what they were going to do with this documentary series, and they kind of created two new songs out of old John Lennon kind of half-written songs.
Oh, wow.
And you see there's a slight tension about it, and it's quite, obviously this is an officially sanctioned show, but you see George Harrison in particular is grumpy. He is grumpy, and Paul McCartney, as you kind of might expect, is trying to keep everyone happy, and he's the kind of driving force behind a lot of the stuff that happens in it, and Ringo is kind of there being Ringo.
So it's illuminating.
It is illuminating, exactly. Mm. Thank you. That's the word I was hurrying to get to. It is, in the end, illuminating, particularly the kind of slightly off-guard moments with George and Paul particularly. And at one point, they just talk about the third song, which they did actually create in the end, which came out, I think, last year or the year before. It was yet another final, previously unrecorded Beatles song, which was, again, based on a John Lennon kind of melody, if you like. And George doesn't want to go there. And he says the original idea for the song is fucking shit, basically, yeah. And which Paul McCartney recounts. And so it is fascinating. So Beatles fans are going to lap it up. And it does look great, and the sound is so much better. And so it's completely, I will be devoting quite a lot of this weekend to watching probably the previous 8 hours that I haven't yet caught up on. Because they are... You know, still they are. They
hold up.
The most extraordinary pop group in the history of music, basically.
No, Taylor Swift, obviously, Boydie.
Oh, James, come on. That's beneath you.
I cannot even.
That's beyond parody. Look, at least he recognises it, and he's laughing at himself.
At least he recognises it, exactly. Yes. So, yeah, full on with Beatles anthology.
Okay. Good shout. I've not watched an awful lot this week. I've been mainly watching The Abandons on Netflix, which is Kurt Sutter's new show.
I was going to bring that up.
Right, yeah. So which we will be reviewing on this week's Pilot
it's
Plus.
It's heavily embargoed.
So we're reviewing that on Pilot Plus. But yes, I love a Kurt Sutter show, so I was looking forward to that.
So we should say that's the one starring Gillian Anderson and...
Lena Headey.
Yeah. Mm. Now, I read this, I don't know if it's entirely true, but is it true that Kurt Sutter abandoned the Western just before it wrapped filming?
I don't know.
Because that is fascinating. I want to know what's going on there.
I need to look into that.
I think the drama off screen seems to be as, as exciting.
Not, I mean, if you look at Kurt Sutter's TV history, this certainly wouldn't be the first time there's been some off-screen drama for him.
But for the showrunner and creator to, like, jump ship just before it's wrapped filming.
I need to look into that Pilot Plus.
Can you research it?
Where did you hear this?
Did Kurt call you?
Yeah, Sutter just got on the line. And it was online, I can tell you that.
Right.
And
good, narrows it down.
It was from a reputable outlet, I think.
Okay.
But then I suddenly got nervous before I said it, so I just caveated.
You're caveating it.
No one sued me, I don't want to be sued.
Made it up completely.
Maybe it's a Hollywood Reporter or Variety, I don't know. James is Googling it, but while he's doing that...
Sutter, who created the drama, was serving a showrunner, left the show over creative differences with Netflix. Absolutely true. Kurt Sutter abandoned The Abandons. Yes.
Quite a story.
That is 100% true. Was reported in October.
And so who replaced him then?
It's a good question.
That's not the story. We just want to know that he dramatically left.
I don't know. But rest assured, I will fully brief myself before we review it on Pilot Plus.
No, I watched a lot of that as well.
Can't say what we think, but we've all watched it.
Abandoned The Abandons. The other thing I have, well, let's be honest, not been watching because I haven't been watching this at all, but I'm going to bring it up anyway because, and that's Task. So we haven't been watching Task, but what me and Boydie did do was jump into a studio yesterday and record a spoiler special for Task.
Gold.
Yes. And I also interviewed Brad Inglesby, the writer and creator of the show.
Wow.
And we chatted about that as well.
You've heeded the requests of the listeners who wanted a
asked for a Task spoiler special.
It was
we delivered.
We heeded.
Yes.
I got in a fantastic new development, I got to listen to James's interview with the showrunner before we recorded our bit, which I've been calling for this to happen for many a year.
Yeah. James pulled his finger out.
Normally we come in blind or deaf, basically, and we don't get to hear the big thing that we're talking around, whereas I listened dutifully.
Yeah, he did.
And the funniest thing about it was...
Don't critique him.
I'm not critiquing anyone.
Oh, no, take away.
I don't mind.
I'm not a twat. Even if I thought, which I don't, by the way, that James didn't do a brilliant job.
He'd be like, unprepared. I didn't know what he was talking about.
I wouldn't tell him.
Well, we always know that you're overprepared for anything.
I'm not a monster.
No, I know, I know.
Anyway, actually, the funniest thing about it is that Brad Inglesby, the showrunner of Task, who he was interviewing, kept referring to James by his name, James, literally... constantly throughout, to the point where it was like, if you say his name again, I'm going to and even like
it's very personal.
James. Yeah, it's a thing that a lot of, it's a very American
thing. It is an American thing.
It's very charming.
Also to say, that's a great question. Quite often, that's what
well, there's an element of media training to it, I think. Because I remember when I interviewed Tom Cruise on the...
Clang.
I mean, on the red carpet for Vanilla Sky way, way, way back when. And
his
I asked him an incredibly inane first base question. And he put his arm around me and went, James, that's a great question.
Oh.
And I thought, so he did two things. He said it's a great question and he also
and he
used my name.
And he also touched me, which
And he also touched me, which HR, but you know, it was the noughties, you know.
I can't believe you allowed it. I remember once when I said to you I was going to give you a hug and you physically recoiled and yet here we are.
I was like, boundaries, Tom.
Was that the start of the beautiful friendship which led to you getting the cake every year?
Do you know what? We're nearly at cake time.
We are nearly at cake time.
Can you save me a slice if I'm
I mean, we'll
it's
see.
It's my favourite.
It is so good.
Well, you can have my slice. Not that I get sent one because I don't like coconut anyway, which is...
He rejects it. I actively devour it.
Oh, so, yeah. I'm looking forward to the cake.
Anyway, Brad kept referring to him as James and it's brilliant.
I'm going
to
start doing that throughout this pod.
Yeah, thanks, James. So I now can't stop calling him James either. And did so for the rest of the pod.
Please do not say my name in vain.
In hilarious fashion.
Yeah, he did. Okay. It's true.
Yeah.
The wag.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all I've been watching. And the main reason for that is we had to record a PTA podcast for Empire, a Paul Thomas Anderson special. And so I was revisiting, and in some cases just visiting all of PTA's films.
I mean, again, you know, I should have been invited to take part in this.
Oh, boy,
I mean, you know, as an
actual
fan.
Listen, when I want to talk about PTA, I'll bring you on board.
But, you know, I needed to be there to champion his best film, Licorice Pizza. So that was all good.
Okay, well, you mentioned the F word, and we know what that is. Film.
F-word? Fuckwit.
We said we're not going to use James's name. We're not allowed to say that.
Do you really think that Licorice Pizza is the best film?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay.
But I enjoyed it a lot more than a lot of people, because a lot of people don't like Licorice Pizza. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Kay, what have you been watching? No films, please.
No. So I watched The Abandons, but we can't talk about it. I also watched another Play for Today, which is A Knock at the Door.
Play for Today, crucially not a game show, just in case anyone listening was going to make that ridiculous error.
Mm-hmm. And that's on the 4th of December, Channel 5, formerly known as Channel 5. And I'm a bit biased because the writer is David Whitehouse, who is a friend of Boyd and I. We used to work with him. But I really enjoyed it. And it's a meditation on celebrity. And Alan Davies is brilliantly cast as this sort of past his prime comedian called Lenny Bray, and they use archive footage of Alan, which is really it's a nice touch. And it's all about how celebrities behave and the consequence of their actions, and it's kind of like the past revisiting him when he tries to be the Good Samaritan when a distressed stranger appears at his door. I want to flag that Nikki Amuka-Bird's in it, who I really like. She was in I, Jack Wright, and it's really good. It's one of the better Play for Todays. I've actually enjoyed all of them, but and I am biased.
Is it the best?
It is up there. Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. And the last thing I want to just talk about quickly. Yes, James, look alert and lively, because it's one of your favourite shows. It is Portrait Arts of the Year. Yeah, I've watched the final. Sky Arts. It's on the 3rd of December. Tune in if you're a fan. And even if you're not, because do you know who the famous sitter is?
Brian Cox.
Boyd, you knew the answer.
Well, you said, do you know? And I do know, and I told you.
I was talking
answer.
To James. Anyway,
I don't even know what the show is.
Yeah, he has no idea.
Well, listen, if you can't figure out what Portrait Artist of the Year is, I can't help you. But anyway.
It is a game show.
Yeah, it is a game show, definitely.
We're talking about the Scottish actor, not the physicist, yeah.
Yeah, it's Brian Cox from Succession, and he is brilliant. He's on such 79 years old, right? And he's on such good form, but crucially, I mean, it's not really a spoiler. He forgets his treasured item. You know, they come with a treasured item. Yeah. And he's kind of like, yeah, I forgot, it's quite early in the morning. But it gets delivered. Yeah. And he struggles to stay awake, which is quite amusing. But he's such a good sport. And the paintings were quite something to behold. So I was happy with the winner.
Good.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Glad they got your approval.
Yeah, that is good. Do you know what I didn't say when we were talking about the TAS spoiler special?
Yeah.
That if you want to listen to it, you've got to subscribe to Pilot Plus.
Oh, yeah.
Which I should say more often. Please subscribe to Pilot Plus if you don't already.
Yeah. If you want to hear Brad Inglesby going saying, James, thanks, James. Yes, James. No, James. Yes. Three bags full, James.
If you want to hear my name taken in vain. But it's a great discussion that we had. And it was a phenomenal interview, obviously. We had a great time. But do subscribe to Pilot Plus. It is a mere £3.49 a month, which is so cheap. I mean, obviously, with the recent budget, you couldn't buy anything for that. So, you know.
Also, while we're at it, hey, do you know what? I think a subscription would make a fantastic Christmas present.
True. Mm. It would.
Right?
You should absolutely buy a subscription to Pilot Plus.
And not for
not
us,
just for yourself, but for everyone you love in your life.
Or hate.
And that does work. Because if you like the podcast, buy it for all the people you love. But if you don't like the podcast, and if you don't, I don't know quite why you're listening. But if you don't, then think of all the people you really don't like and buy it for
families.
Them.
It's a great
gift. For Kay, I've obviously bought her a subscription to Pilot Plus for Christmas. why I've bought it for her, well, who knows? Who knows? Right, should we have a listener question?
Why didn't you get a subscription to the Empire podcast? Because she loves films.
And I love your voice.
I cannot imagine. So, Boydie, here's a question. Yeah. Do you subscribe to the Empire Spoiler Specials podcast?
I think you or someone very kindly gave me a free.
Oh, yeah.
So I have
good.
Got.
I'm
so
very good like
I
that.
Get them in my feed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering what do you think Kay would make of the Empire podcast?
I
cannot imagine she would sanction our buffoonery.
No.
If I loved film, I'd definitely watch it. Although, doesn't it run to 8 hours or something? I just don't know if I'm
not every episode.
That.
Some episodes do run to 8 hours. Yeah.
What's James like on it?
He's.
Would I approve?
What's he like?
I'm occasionally present.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, I'm not listening.
He floats in and out, shall we say.
And how do they deal with that? Are they like,
they just get on with it.
They just kind of ignore him and then he'll come back. Suddenly
and he's
at
back
the
in
end.
The room.
To be fair,
he's back in the room,
it's not unlike meetings that I'm in. Like, that happens a lot in.
Funnily enough,
just,
would you believe it?
So you're just constantly zoning out.
I fade in and out of.
Oh, I take it less personally then.
Yeah.
I think I used to take it personally because every now and again, and people say on, when they get in touch, they're like, oh yeah, but I think he does it when it's like reality TV. And it's not, listeners.
No.
It's like whenever, as I say, his lips aren't moving. But what's really funny is that, he occasionally will zone in. And once when I confronted him about this, I said, James, why are you zoning out? And do you know what your riposte to me was?
No. Oh, be more interesting?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
be
I've used that before. So this is an attention deficit thing, unfortunately. And it's just something that I do. But yes, in meetings, I often say, if people want to ask me a question, they should definitely say my name. So Brad Ingsby. Brad, yeah. Maybe that's why he was doing it, just to make sure I was listening to all his answers. He kept saying my name to snap me back into focus.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to do, though.
Do you think he could see me drifting? And he's just, James, James, James. I'm like, yeah, okay, Brad, listen.
I'm going to get one of those horns, you know, like you can just
an air horn
and just like every time I want him to look lively.
Yeah, it is true, though, in meetings, everyone knows to say my name before they ask me a question because I'm not listening. And here's a sidetrack for you. When I was about 22, I did some temp work and I accidentally got assigned as a PA to someone who worked for a defence contractor. I have no idea how. And so I was in quite an important high-level meeting as his PA wasn't available. So I was like covering for her. And I had to take minutes in the meeting. So the fact that I don't know how to take a minute at all. No idea. Never been trained, not PA. But obviously, I didn't listen because it was really fucking boring. And so at the end, he went, James, could you just read back that last bit?
Oh my God.
I was like, what? And he said, what? And he came over to look at my pad, and I had literally just been drawing doodles and pictures on a piece of paper all the way through this meeting. I kid you not, I was fired before lunch. I didn't even make it to lunchtime.
You're probably doodling Star Trek characters.
I mean, it was almost certainly little Klingons or something, but yeah, I was fired.
So. Do you know what? I'm feeling much better actually having that conversation with you. So I don't feel
it's not personal.
Yeah,
is what I'm
not
saying.
Taking it personally.
Are you taking notes now?
I'm doodling pictures. Right. Yeah, I'm doing my working on my portrait artist of the year piece.
Oh yeah.
Oh, we should do that at Christmas. We should just do a little sketch of each other.
Wow.
Well, Kate, there's no need because we already have a sketch of the three of us. Drawn by one of our lovely listeners.
Because I feel bad about that.
I feel if we're going to send out a Pilot TV Christmas card, that's what we should use because it's a masterpiece.
It is at this point I'm going to tell you this thing that happened yesterday, which is that, you know, I have a column in Heat every week and I have had for many, many years.
We should say, you bring it up because of tonight?
No, I'm absolutely not.
So we
should mention it is the night of the BSME Awards as we record this today. And Boydie is up for an award for columnist of the year.
And we are so, before you go into that, Boyd, we are so proud. And whatever the result tonight, well, first of all, I think you're going to win.
I've been saying
this to you for days.
Yeah.
But irrespective of that, James and I are very proud.
Yes.
And you are our Boydo of the year.
Also, we should say, just for full disclosure, formerly of this parish, Terry White is, I have heard, on the judging panel.
I don't think she's on the judging panel for this award.
No, probably not. Yeah, she would recuse herself. She's very very moral that way.
Anyway, I'm not going to win, and thank you very much. But I don't bring this up because of that at all. No. This is a separate issue. So it's
called Boyd's TV
Boyd's
Land.
Boyd's TV Land, and there's a picture of me.
With a crown.
With a crown, right. So this has been there for like, I think maybe 10, 15 years, something like that. We discovered this week, someone on the picture department discovered that we've been paying someone, like a picture agency, like something like 20 quid a week to use the body that my head is
planted onto. It's superimposed, right?
It's superimposed my head onto a random body. We're just wearing a white t-shirt.
You've been paying for it every time.
And they've been paying, magazine's been paying someone somewhere about 20 quid a week every single week for going on for like 10, 15 years to literally, and they could have just taken a fucking picture of me.
Oh,
and they never did.
Is it run to thousands?
I mean, you do the math.
Are they going to take a picture of you now?
We're going to use the picture. We did that photo shoot recently.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For the ad. So they're using one of those, which is just a picture.
That is wild.
Isn't that insane? Someone somewhere. And I literally had to like, people were going like, they planted your body on a random person with a t-shirt. I can't even remember why we did that. Why didn't they just
use? It was back in the day when the art team used to have fun superimposing our heads on different things.
Wow.
They were being playful. Yeah.
That fun has cost us.
It's an expensive mistake.
Boyd's
bonus has just plummeted.
I mean, you know, it'll explain a lot of things. Yeah, you know, but yeah, it was ridiculous. So that is changing for next week.
Okay,
no more
thank
money
goodness.
Is being sent to that.
Wow. Anyway, good luck for tonight. We are rooting for you.
Thanks. It's someone from New Statesman will win. Oh, this Harrods magazine's got two nominees.
Of course, they
do. Who knew? Yeah. So there we are.
I have no idea how we got onto this.
We're on a listener's question.
Oh, yes, right. That's right.
I'll bring us back.
Thank you.
So
we're back in the room.
I did a shout out this morning asking for a listener question. We had one person reply and they said...
Oh, God.
No, it's fine. I mean, I would say this is the image I put up, right, which is a picture of Poirot.
It's David Suchet.
Yes,
yep.
Saying, asking for a question. And they came back and it's Saba who says, which roles would the team be cast in an Agatha Christie? So many archetypes, too few pilot crew.
In an What are the archetypes? You are the expert in this case, so I think you need to lead this since you are a Poirot-file. So list for us, please, the Agatha Christie archetypes. Obviously, there's the detective.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, to be fair, they say I don't know. I don't know what they are.
I mean, first of all, you've got the detective, and often the detective is kind of assistant, mm-hmm. like figure.
Or okay.
Like, whether they're officially their assistant or whether they end up becoming like a kind of sidekick type of figure. That happens quite a lot.
Like the doctor's companion.
And they're quite doofus, like it's Hastings. So yeah. It's kind of like someone who is not super as bright as, for yeah. example,
it's like Clark. A Watson to Holmes kind of relationship. That happens quite
You're
a lot.
Coming for Ted Hastings.
Yeah, no, not Ted Hastings. How dare you?
You mean Hastings in Poirot?
Yeah, Captain yes. Hastings.
Yeah, and I would say there are a lot of posh, rich, patriarchal type figures,
right.
who are seemingly ruthless and dodgy, and are often the big red herring because you think they yeah. probably did do it because they're posh and entitled and. You know, generally treat people badly, but end up not being the actual killer. I think there are a lot of borderline abused women who are, you know, I think there are quite a few of those kind of women who have been treated badly by their
mate. Maybe. I don't know.
No?
I don't know. I'm not convinced of these archetypes. I mean, like, definitely with the sidekick, but yeah.
So just one. You're just thinking about Poirot. Kay is obsessed with Poirot rather than Agatha Christie. Like,
for my birthday
yeah.
one year, Boyd bought me the DVD box set,
yeah,
the complete
yeah.
box set.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so a Herculean effort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But
yes, exactly. So I think I've read more. But if you all the different ones that have been done recently, the Sarah Phelps adaptations.
Yes.
They're definitely similar.
Oh, yeah, there was that. Sort of rich benefactor.
Yeah.
Boyd would be the rich benefactor, yes, yeah. obviously. That was
there's often like a younger, there's basically like...
A young fop.
A young fop of some kind, yeah. That, you know, so yeah.
But, right, you're going to be the rich benefactor who gets killed off. No offence, Boyd. And then I reckon James would be the...
I think you'd be the sidekick. You'd be the
sidekick.
Yeah. Big sidekick.
Do not make him the detective.
Fell plea.
That basis alone, he is going to be like a yeah. terrible character.
I want to be the Benoit Blanc figure.
No, you cannot. Okay, I'll be the psychic. But
psychic or sidekick?
Sidekick. A psychic sidekick. Who would you be, James?
No, I'm going to choose for myself. If I can't be the actual detective, I'll be like the bumbling police inspector who clearly can't do it, which is why they bring in the detective to like the Benoit
Scotland,
Blanc.
Scotland Yard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The doofus from Scotland Yard.
Mm.
Yeah, I can see you in that role.
I tell you what, I think I'm right in saying, I think there are quite often, it's often like a semi-famous character in them as well, like maybe like a movie star
yeah.
or a sports star. In fact, mm-hmm. if you remember
the tennis.
I think the most, the tennis player.
The the celebs.
Yeah, I think that crops up quite a lot. I think there are
Boydie, you're the most famous one among us. So,
but do you think he's more the rich benefactor? He
could be both.
He
could be. So it's the victim. You're saying?
Yes.
Boydie's the corpse.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely am the victim. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a real
lot of jealous people vying to kill me. Yeah, definitely.
Well, if Boyd's dead, I'm almost certainly the killer. So you know.
Yeah. That'll be a turn of events.
And it's going to be like a breeder's debacle. Like, it went one step too far and it all ended badly.
Charming.
Gosh, and I'll be just trying to, once again, just trying to like clean up the mess and sort it all out.
Kay's main obsession with
Do not bring. Are you going to bring up the film? Don't bring up the film.
Of course I am, yeah. You know, she is obsessed with...
The moustache.
You know, the moustache, exactly. Mm. And
more than the moustache,
infuriated by Ken Branagh's version.
You don't like Poirot. Sir Kenneth?
Yeah.
I like him as a gentleman and as an actor, but not in the role of Poirot because he did a lot of things that were not in keeping with his character.
Like
right?
What?
Right. First of all, the Tash. It's ridiculous. I'm not going to give it option.
Hercule's always had, you know,
not that monstrous. Not that monstrous.
Monstrous.
Yeah, it was.
It
was
magnificent.
No, it was ridiculous. It was a It made him a figure of fun.
She took against the moustache.
Wow.
Possibly.
More than that, Boyd and I went to the screening.
We went to the premiere. We went to the world premiere of the Royal Albert Hall. In fact,
mm-hmm.
and you still complained. That's all I'm
afterwards.
Saying.
Afterwards. Yeah. But also, right, he looked dishevelled at times, right?
Dishevelled?
Yeah, like his attire.
I've had to put up with this nonsense for years.
He wasn't neatened, right?
Neatened?
Yes.
Okay.
Also,
not sure if that's
he
a word.
Ran. Yeah, and it's not.
He ran.
He ran.
Right.
Poirot would never run.
Because he was a younger, more lithe Poirot, wasn't he?
This is a famous Suchet thing, isn't it? Where Suchet refused to run because he said Poirot wouldn't run.
He wouldn't run.
I think a lot of that was maybe David Suchet didn't want to run.
Indeed.
No, I think he had studied the texts and realised that he was a dignified character who would not run.
What if he was in a rush?
And hare around. That's what Hastings is for. He would do all that running around and being a fool.
Is this why you don't run anywhere? Because you just expect me and Boydie to do it for you?
Well, as you know, I'm a good runner. I've done 2 marathons, but, you know.
You haven't walked them, though.
I haven't walked them.
James, don't start.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's we go down that rabbit hole again.
Yeah, best
walking
not.
Marathons with Gabby Logan, my Alan Partridge
for anyone who doesn't subscribe
out
to Pilot Plus, someone call Boyd out on his partridge
accidental partridgism.
I might give a talk soon on my experiences of walking the marathon with
you
Gabby.
Should
ridiculous
and Sue Cook
anyway.
Yes.
That was a great question.
That was a great question. Yeah. If you would like your question read out, then please do send it in. PilotTV@empiremagazine.com is the email address in question.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Time now to move on to this week's news. And a few things have happened. He says, desperately playing for time while I try and bring up my list of news. Who's got something in the meantime?
Well, you know what I'm going to do is this is an annual treat, I think, that I do on this podcast.
Oh, God.
What?
Is this where you're going to list every single show on over Christmas?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Kate, do you want to get tea?
No, I'm not. Do you know what?
This is really useful because I've heard, well, you kind of teased us a few weeks ago saying, oh, it's not very good, guys. So, yeah, tell us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, because remember last year we had Doctor Who, we had Gavin and Stacey, we had Wallace and Gromit, you know, there were loads of, it was chock-a-block. I mean, Wallace and Gromit and Gavin and Stacey are two of the biggest TV hits in history. Mm-hmm. And I think if you compare it to those this year, it's not as exciting. The real excitement is New Year's Day, to be honest, where you've got the Night Manager coming back.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah. So these have been confirmed for New Year's Day.
Yep.
The return of the Night Manager after, what, 6, 7 years or something?
It's been a while.
Tom Hiddleston.
Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman's back. And he goes under... He's kind of like a jobbing spy now, I think. And he goes back and kind of meets some new dodgy people and kind of goes undercover with a couple or something like that. Anyway, just the mere fact that the Night Manager is back is big news. And Red Eye is ITV1's big offering, mm-hmm. I think, for New Year's Day with Martin Comerson, we've talked about this before, joining as the male lead. Second season.
Yeah, guest star. I was going to bring that up. So I mentioned it before because I was hosting the launch at the same time that Martin Compton, the news was breaking that he was going to be in Line of Duty for season 7. Mm. And Jing Lucy's reprising a role, as is Leslie Sharp and Gemma Cook. And I'm excited. I've watched all 6 episodes.
Oh.
But I'm not allowed to say anything.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
I'm in the big pocket.
I'll get you to write that preview.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Oh, good. There's also Amadeus. We've mentioned Amadeus before. That's on Sky Atlantic. That I'm very much very excited about that. If anyone's seen the trailers, Joe Barton, Spurs fan Joe Barton, is going to be feeling low, but we can give him a boost by saying it is one of the best things on over Christmas. I think it's going to be one of the best things on over Christmas. That's going to be on Sky Atlantic and Now. And then there's a thing called Dear Father Christmas, which is a one-off starring Lenny Rush as a 16-year-old who still believes in Father Christmas. And that looks quite fun.
There's no reason not to, Boyd, for anyone listening.
Exactly. And there's the annual, Mark Gatiss, A Ghost Story for Christmas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is back. And Tobias Menzies, is that how we pronounce his name now? Think is in it, and Joe Lumley's in it, one of your favourites, Kay.
I love Joe Lumley.
Apart from that, there is a lot of Call the Midwife, Death in Paradise, Beyond Paradise, all of that kind of stuff that isn't, I would say, entirely thrilling. And there's, I'm just being honest, Kay.
Listen, you've always got to be honest.
Always got to be honest. And then in the comedy sphere, that's drama. In the comedy sphere, what I would mention is Amanda Land has a special.
Yes. Oh, does it?
Yes.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. And not only is it, of course, the character of the Joanne Lumley's character is back in it, the brilliant Joanne Lumley is that kind of really insane mother figure. But there's a new character who is going to be played by Jennifer Saunders. So it's an
AbFab
reunion.
Nice one.
Within the Amanda Land universe.
Can't wait.
How good is that?
Do we know what day, did you say?
No, the days, the specific days for these shows haven't been confirmed yet. It's just been confirmed that these are the big offerings coming up.
Not too shabby.
No. No.
There's
indeed.
All this outcry, like I saw online, of like, oh, the BBC hasn't got anything good in, just generally.
Well, I have a couple more to mention. I haven't finished yet.
Please.
This is what James is going on about, that I go through every single, taking the piss, that
it's
I go
a
through every
surface.
Single show. Thank you. Here we go. The excellent BBC One comedy.
Oh my God, I love that.
Tom Basden of The Ballad of Thingy What's It fame.
The Ballad of Thingy What's It,
Catherine
famously.
Catherine Parkinson, Alistair Steadman.
Yeah,
it's
legends.
A brilliant show. Have you ever watched Here We Go?
It's the one with the GoPro,
like
the camera. Do you remember the boy, the
cringe.
Son of the... The son of the house
it's kind
is making
of cringe
documentary.
I think I have watched, I think we've reviewed it, and
it's
I think
really
I've watched
funny.
An episode
yeah,
of it,
I
and
think
I think
did.
I didn't enjoy it.
Oh, okay.
But then again, that shouldn't be a huge shock.
No, no, no.
If anything, that's an endorsement.
It's not
that's
an endorsement.
It's not a shock at all.
Yeah.
But that's a New Year's Eve themed episode, so I'm guessing it's going to go out on New Year's Eve as well. Then there's a special for Mandy, Diane Morgan's Mandy. I think we all love Diane
James
Morgan.
James will absolutely hate that.
Yeah, I struggle with that.
In fact, that's the one that you were cutting a tree branch, weren't you? When you're on a ladder or painting the ceiling?
I was painting the ceiling when we did Kunk on Earth.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, Kunk, yeah. Kunk is brilliant. Yeah, to be fair. There's a new sitcom from Brendan O'Carroll. Who he? You know who Brendan O'Carroll is?
Mrs. Brown, your favourite.
Mrs. Brown's Boys, your favourite, James's favourite.
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Brown's Boys is back for its required, legally required Christmas Day special. But
Thank God for that.
Yeah, he's created a new sitcom called Sheddites, which is about a gang of eccentric men and their misadventures in a shed in Ireland.
Sounds unmissable.
And then there's lots of entertainment stuff, which I won't go into because that will annoy James.
Yes.
But all I'd say is The Wheel. Christmas Wheel. I mean, that's going to be brilliant. And The Traitors is back, finally, on New Year's Day. Regular Traitors.
Ooh.
Regular non-celebrity Traitors. Civilian Traitors, if you like. New Year's Day, BBC One. So New Year's Day, the big day is New Year's
Day.
Right? It's the biggest day of the year in theory. New Year's Day was when, the post office scandal drama began. The Tourist was on New Year's Day.
It's catching to everyone.
Happy Valley was New Year's Day.
Tired,
so they reserve their biggest show, sometimes of the whole year, to go out on the first day of the year, New Year's Day. I wouldn't be surprised if Line of Duty, which they'll be filming in spring, if they keep that over to next New Year's Day.
That's a bold claim. Remember it.
They've never done it before.
No, but they've done it with Happy Valley before, but it worked pretty well for them when they did do it in the end. I may be wrong. I have been known
rarely,
to be wrong.
Boyd,
every now
rarely.
And then, it happens. But I'm saying they'll be tempted, I bet, because it's such a huge night. But we'll see.
Boydie, when you walked a marathon, were you doing it in honour of Hercule Poirot because he wouldn't run?
No.
Okay, just clearing that up.
Also, do you know what that tells me? That he hasn't listened to any of your lists?
No,
Christmas
I tuned
list.
Out some time ago.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Now, an important thing which did actually break last week and we didn't actually talk about, and I can't remember if it broke after we recorded, was that House of the Dragon has been kind of stealth renewed because they were putting out pictures of the new season of House of the Dragon and they mentioned that there's loads of Game of Thrones action coming our way because next year's not only sees the first season of the A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the adaptation of The Hedge Knight, which I've already seen. and of course, the next season of House of the Dragon. But then 2027, season two of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is already sorted. And then House of the Dragon, another season, which was originally going to be the final one, is going to be airing in 2028. So we don't know if that's going to be the last one or not. It was originally going to be the fifth and final season of House of the Dragon, but who knows whether it will continue. But yeah, so
I'm now more confused
many dragons.
Than illuminated, frankly.
Really? Well, that was my goal.
Okay.
Over Christmas, I am thinking of like delving into...
You're not going to, though, are you?
No.
Delving into what?
Game of Thrones.
I
thought you had James's brain.
No,
oh,
I mean,
God. Oh my God.
That's a terrifying place to go.
Yeah.
Speaking of the upside down, let's... No, but the you're not going to do it. I don't believe you.
Well, James, I mean, that's not
blatantly accusing you of not.
Yeah. Boy, I'm using reverse psychology. You're never going to do it.
James,
you're never going to do
you
it.
You didn't think I didn't know that's what you were doing. And that makes me then think, oh, I'm not going to watch it. So stop saying anything.
So you're doing reverse psychology. Yeah, exactly. I see what you did there.
You know, we're both perverse in that way.
It's,
so anyway,
it's very difficult.
Listen, can I tell you some ITV news?
If you must.
James. So first of all, we had...
Snob.
Yeah,
still.
Exactly. That's one word for it. So first of all, the Red Eye News, which is exciting New Year's Day. But also there's two other dramas that have been communicated to us via email, which is Betrayal.
Press releases of Inception.
Yes,
yeah.
The words just went from my head.
Yeah.
So this is a four-part drama by David Elridge, and it's starring Sean Evans and Romola Garai. And apparently it's about a mid-career MI5 officer, played by Evans, who is navigating a rapidly evolving intelligence landscape. And he basically kind of meets up with a British-Iranian man who has links to a gangland who claimed to have intelligence about an imminent plot in the UK. But things take an unexpected turn. And then John finds himself, that's Sean Evans' character, under internal investigation led by, among others, Simone, played by Nikki Amuka-Bird. She's everywhere at the
You're
moment.
You're obsessed.
I am. She's fantastic.
With Nikki.
Yeah, so she's in it, and Romola's playing John's wife. So that's interesting. Looking forward to that. But more importantly, I'm even more excited about the news that there's a drama called Gone coming out on ITV.
This is
it's a commission. And the name... To be fair, I'm instantly going to forget. It will be gone from my mind because it's not a memorable one. However, the talent involved are fantastic. So we have my favourite Eve Miles, David Morrissey, fantastic. And it's written by, James, zone back in, it's written by Hijack Lupin writer George Kay. So I know you're going to be interested in that.
Yes.
Because he is fantastic and he writes really... really gripping dramas. This is a psychological drama. It's a six-part series, and it's apparently set against the backdrop of a prestigious private school. So, James, you'll relate. a foreboding forest and the quiet sprawl.
Oh, I love a foreboding forest.
And you love Bristol, so it's all coming together nicely for you. It's a chilling mystery focusing on local headmaster Michael, played by Morrissey, who becomes...
Played by Morrissey? That I'd like to see.
by the bigger legend, David Morrissey,
yes,
who becomes the prime suspect in his wife Sarah's disappearance. So already very intriguing. And Eve Miles is going to play the gutsy detective Annie Cassidy, who enters into a game of cat and mouse with Michael. And I'm excited about that. So that's another good drama for ITV.
Anything from the pen of George Kay is exciting because Lupin is brilliant, genius.
Fantastique.
Très bien.
Sorry, I derailed you, Boyd, for my fantastic French.
And hostage. What's hostage in French? Does anyone know? L'hostage?
L'hostage.
Yeah.
I presume. He's obviously brilliant. And George Kay didn't do... I don't think he worked on this series.
Would it not be Lijack? Was it Lijack or L'hostage? Which one was it? Was it hostage or hijack?
It was hijack.
It was hijack.
Oh, yeah. Did I say
hijack? It was Lijack, not L'hostage.
Thanks for correcting me on that. Bloody hell. I only interviewed Jim Phil Smith, the showrunner, and Andrew Jussel before I...
Do try and get the name of the show right.
I think I got the name of the show right in front of them.
I'm pretty sure.
So, your show, Hostage.
I'm pretty sure I got it right. Did I tell you the story of how, of that, that I interviewed them at
I see, yeah. I haven't spoken to you since you did it.
Yes.
But I know you were going to do it, and I remember the situation, the absurd situation where you were going to interview them, and you were going to do it over Zoom, but you were going to be in the hotel. So you were going to be in like a suite next to theirs, but doing it over Zoom.
That worked.
And is this because of the restraining order? Are they just not allowed to share a space with you?
That was for, I did two things. That was for a press conference, an international press conference that I hosted. And I did host it from
for
a
L'hostage.
For the exactly. For Lijack.
Money well spent, people.
For Hijack. And they were in a different room. And I was in another room hosting the press conference bit of it. That did happen. But
are
no,
they germphobic?
But then I got in the same room as them and fully shook Idris's hand and Jim Field Smith's hand, the showrunner. And we were together in the same room. But what happened was... Idris remembered I'm an Arsenal fan. I think I might be wearing this an Arsenal jumper as well, the Arsenal jumper I wear quite a lot.
That might be more likely than him just saying, Boyd, aren't you an Arsenal fan?
But the last time I interviewed him, I remember we banged on about Arsenal quite a lot. Anyway, this time, we had very limited time, so we couldn't bang on about Arsenal, but he was quite late to the junket because he'd been filming an interview with our brilliant player Eze that day at the Arsenal training ground, and that was for Sky, and they showed Idris Elba's interview. So Idris Elba was not only only now a brilliant actor who's in one of our favourite shows, he's also interviewing Arsenal players now.
Listen, he's coming for your work. I hope you're going to make him feel as bad as you've made me.
Idris can do what the fuck
he'll
he wants.
He'll be hosting your press conferences.
I mean,
he's a fan of the pod, remember. He's a friend of the pod.
And so I watched it on Sky on Sunday and it was absolutely brilliant. And not only that, of course, Eze scored a hat-trick, became the first player
since 1978
to score on a hat-trick for Arsenal against Spurs. So yeah, that was the whole brilliant Arsenal-related incident in my Idris Elba chat. And you'll get to hear my chat with Idris Elba and Jim Phil Smith, the showrunner, in January when Hijack goes out.
Yeah.
Hijack. Set on a train this time, of course.
Yes, it is.
And James and
which blew James's mind when we tried to explain that to him, because he was like, how could
it happen? A train? What is this madness?
Yeah. I thought that you were going to highlight in the news, by the way, the capture, the new series of the capture that's been, they showed a picture of your favourite.
Yes. He's nodding sagely.
I am nodding. I did see the announcement. And when is the date, Boydie?
They issued a date, but they've just said there's a first look picture of your favourite Holiday Granger.
There was a picture, but we knew it was coming. I know that because Holiday literally said it on this podcast.
Yeah, we knew it was coming, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be early next year is all I'm saying, yeah. But there's a description of the storyline, which is that it's been 12 months since Rachel Carey broadcast a live deepfake of a government minister to the nation, exposing the UK intelligence service's clandestine video manipulation program. Amidst an inquiry into the unlawful case of correction, Carey has become acting commander of counterterrorism command, determined to regain the public's trust, etc. Then there's a brutal but exceptionally well-coordinated act of terror that she has to deal with.
I'm interested to see this, not least of all because since the capture started, this has obviously become incredibly topical.
Yes.
But also, the technology has moved on to such a point now that reality has surpassed what was depicted in the show. So I'm fascinated to see how they handle that.
I know what you mean, yeah. It's true. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think the male lead is Killian Scott, by the way, in that show coming up.
I love the capture. Can't wait.
It's great, yeah. Excited.
Are we done with news?
Yeah.
We're done with news. Fantastic. Let's move on, as is our tradition, to this week's reviews. And first up, we begin with the fifth and final season of Stranger Things, which dropped last Thursday on the Netflix. It's been 3 years since season 4 of Stranger Things, if you can believe that. A good old way, I would say, by anyone's standards. And 9 years since the show began back in 2016. So this has been going for quite a while. The stars, who were kids when this began, are basically in their late 40s at this point. And this does continue the story of Hawkins in Indiana and the kind of encroachment of a parallel hell dimension called the Upside Down and its dream-invading boogeyman, Vecna, played by Jamie Campbell-Bauer. Who can save them from his evil clutches, Kay? Obviously, it's Millie Bobby Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we should say that this isn't the whole of season 5. This is the first 4 episodes of season 5. The second tranche of this final season drops on Christmas Eve, special advance gift from Father Christmas, and then they've saved the finale for New Year's Eve. This is, by any reckoning...
Did you say Boxing Day in the one?
That's no,
Boxing
Day one Christmas well. Eve.
Oh, Christmas Eve. I think it's Boxing Day.
It's Christmas Eve.
Well, all I can say to you is that it's Christmas Day in the US... For sure. I mean, I can show you on this screen.
James,
here.
This can't be true.
That means it's going to be Boxing Day here.
James, it says
I've made up a little song for you. It's called Egg on Your Face, Egg on Your Face.
It's actually, we're both wrong. It's Christmas Day. It's not Christmas Eve and it's not Boxing Day. We were both wrong. It's Christmas Day.
But the main Who can we trust anymore?
The main thing to remember for everyone is that James was wrong.
Hey,
and
there
also
was enough
that
wrongness
I came up
to go
with
around.
A very jazzy little song.
You did come up with a good song, to be fair. All right, so as I said before, it's Christmas Day. Father Christmas will drop it down the chimney and then the finale will air on New Year's Eve. So if you're looking for an excuse not to go out and socialise, which, let's be honest, I will be, we can stay in and watch the finale of Stranger Things.
Look, as I'm sure many of you listening to this will doubtless have realised by this point, Boyd may have not been quite as wrong as advertised in talking about the dates for Stranger Things. It does, in fact, air the second part on, well, Christmas Day in the US, but crucially, Boxing Day here in the UK. And the finale does not, in fact, air on New Year's Eve in the UK, although it does in the US. It airs on New Year's Day here in the UK. Now, look... Was I wrong? It's not the most right I've ever been. Was I needlessly smug and while also being, crucially, not entirely correct? Possibly. But look, here's the thing. I know, and you know, that neither Boyd nor Kay listen to this podcast, so they're never going to know. So this will just be our little secret. Okay? Thanks.
I will just air my opinion that this is a deranged rollout for this final season, and it annoys the hell out of me.
Yes.
But that's only because I'm massively entitled. But I do, and I get kind of why they're doing it, but it's the whole cultural event thing, but it's also kind of stretching it out. Like, it's just like, oh my God, just give us the series already. Anyway, we've got four episodes. They are with us. It's fine. Now, Boydie saw the first episode and 8 minutes at the recent premiere.
Yes.
I did not get screeners for this, so I had to get up at the crack of dawn and watch it before work this morning. But to try and contain myself and to try and, you know, I didn't want to make you feel bad, Boydie, because I mean, you know, I'm good that way. What I watched this morning was the first episode, which is an hour and 11 minutes. 11?
Yes.
Accident? I don't think so. Yeah. An hour and 11 minutes. And then I watched the first 8 episodes of season 2 so that I
eight
would
minutes.
Be... Did I say seconds? Yeah. That would have been
those
a really
episodes.
Short period. The first 8 episodes. Yeah, I was
so
the first
confusing.
8 episodes. I'm getting very confused. It was the whole Boxing Day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day thing. It's thrown me.
Yeah.
Anyway, I watched the first 8 minutes of the second episode, which is the bit before the title sequence, so that I got your premiere experience.
Yeah.
And then only for you to tell me that you got it this morning and watched the rest of it.
No. I haven't watched the rest of it. I literally watched the half of the rest of the episode, which is barely anything with a lot of upside down stuff going
sleep?
On. Yeah. No,
he doesn't sleep.
Yeah. No, I don't sleep.
I've
barely watched any more than you have.
Okay.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, remember,
you
it's
went
not competition.
In absolutely. You have been completely immune to this cultural phenomenon throughout its 9-year
run.
No,
I like to do that every now and again.
I know you
really
do.
Really dip out.
Yeah.
So I dipped in this morning at 6:30.
We're gonna find out soon if we're going to follow Game of Thrones with Kanger Things. where Kay watches Stranger Things. I'm trying here.
It's not your best work.
Yeah. But Boydie, tell us. Tell us what you thought.
I thought that so it begins with like a flashback to when Will, right
Andy.
At the beginning, was captured in the Upside Down and by Vecna, the kind of big monster of the whole show, if you like, who seems to run the as you say, the parallel universe that we call the Upside Down. And that was, so it was a kind of, I thought that was quite a clever thing to remind us of how it all began. And they used a kind of youthing CGI on his face as we got to see the young Will abducted. And really, some really horrible things being said and done to him in that first scene. But this was like, I felt a lot of this episode felt like bringing back a lot of things that happened early on in the whole inception of...
A little bit of retconning going on.
A little bit of retconning, exactly. You could put it that way.
Yeah.
But with added full-on violence, gore, quite adult stuff going on. I mean, it is 15...
Yeah, it is a horror series.
It is a horror series.
It's always been
it has been always been quite gnarly. But so I would say this feels even more gnarly than it was at the beginning of when the show started. To me, it felt more gnarly.
And what's got gnarly is it's got... I always think the most recent, the fourth season was the goriest, the first season was the scariest, in my opinion.
That's probably fair.
Yeah.
But the Duff Brothers always say it's a show about teenagers, not for teenagers.
Right.
And I think that's...
Even though all kids basically watch it.
100%.
Yeah.
So I think that I really like the way it opened. I thought that was interesting. They reminded you that, you know, this trauma really that Will endured is still affecting him now, and he's kind of seeing visions, kind of upside downy type visions. And I think he is going to be the actual fore of this whole at the forefront of this whole final season. And interestingly as well, there's a lot of speculation all the way through. The actor came out as gay after the last season went out, and they kind of felt like they were hinting at his sexuality, and I think that's going to be addressed full on, as it is in fact a little bit towards the end, isn't it, of the first episode being in the second episode. So I think that's going to be an interesting element of the whole show. So I think there's a lot about Will. And then as the rest of the episode got underway, it was like a reminder of all the main characters quite nicely kind of slotted into place. And so and what you realised was, it reminded me a little bit of, not of Pluribus specifically, but of that method of showing us what all the different characters are up to, and then them all kind of coming together in the end. I think what they're all trying to do is save Hawkins from the monsters in the Upside Down. And you see that slowly becomes clear as we see what they're all doing. Like a lot of the late teenage youngsters all at the college radio station. There's
I enjoyed that bit.
Yeah, they live. I think the radio station stuff I really liked generally.
Me too.
Yeah, it was really, it's a really good setting. Eleven is doing like an assault course thing to show that she's ready to fight when it needs to be, when the battle needs to be fought. Her adoptive father, Lily Allen's ex-husband. By the way, I couldn't shake that. There's something about.
Please, it's difficult, as someone who doesn't watch the show, who's going into it, I was like, oh, it's Lily Allen's ex. Yeah, I forgot about him.
Yeah. It's real. It's, I think that will have a real impact on people who watch it. Yeah, it's hard to shake that feeling just because he's such. I mean, he's a good guy in the show now. Anyway, but yeah,
yeah. Except everyone's seeing him and they're hearing Pussy Palace play in their heads.
Well, so. I had Madeline playing in my head when I was watching it, and then I just listened to the album again.
And then the kids are kind of are brought back as well, quite cleverly. Dustin is being bullied at school and all that. There's always been that kind of high school.
Well, he is and he isn't. I mean, he kind of is, yes. But also, like, he's become like the new Eddie Munson, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and he's quite, he's actually, he's got proper attitude because they've grown up a lot.
Mm.
And we should say Lucas in particular.
Yes, yes, in one way.
You teed him up for something he wasn't saying.
Right, what is that? I don't know what that is. Yeah. Well, no, but like, cause as in Lucas is like quite a big, sporty jock type.
Oh,
who's
he's
become much more physical in this. Yeah. Like, he's got whole... Because it's funny, it's strange to see, like, when we saw him, how old were they when we first saw them? Like, 13?
Yeah.
12?
He was becoming a jock in the last season.
Yeah, but he's very much
inhabited.
Yeah, the injockification has completed in this particular season.
100%.
Yeah.
Anyway, all the characters are quite cleverly, nicely brought back to remind us of who they are, and they're all kind of working together really to achieve the same ends, which is fighting Vecna and getting into the Upside Down, sorting out their lives. And I just think it's a really, I think if you get all the hype and the annoying release schedule, I agree with you about that. It's still a really brilliantly made, it looks incredible, it really is ultra cinematic. I thought of you when the Duffer Brothers, one of the Duffer Brothers did a guide to how your television settings on Insta. I think it was on Insta or YouTube or something, saying do not turn on all these different things. This is, you just got to watch it, you know, you got to make sure you have the right settings and don't use all the clever stupid ones that you get.
So turn off motion smoothing, which you should always do anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, which is because it does look so good. And again, I referred to this in Pilot Plus the other day, but there's this whole thing about how all Netflix shows look the same. They don't. This looks incredible in its own right, and it has its own visual feel, which obviously is still influenced by Steven Spielberg films and all of that, but it just looks incredible. The characters are so well delineated, it's so well cast. They've all grown up to be really good actors. You know, I think it's interesting because you could see kids of that age when they start out in other... So I remember the early days of Harry Potter thinking, I'm not sure how good some of these actors are, but they've really come good, this lot, and they're fantastic, I think, pretty much all of them. And then the ending, which is really gnarly, I thought, I was like, yeah, this is, you know, it's going to go places where it hasn't gone before in the sense of it's going to be really, you know, shocking, thrilling, exciting. And sure enough, I think the ending of episode one and the first 8 minutes of episode two are...
I agree.
Great.
I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's full on. So I'm fully here for it and can't wait to watch the rest of it this weekend. I'll be absolutely glued to my Netflix on my television, Kay.
I mean, most people listening to this will have already seen it at this point, I would
That's
think.
That's true, yeah.
Because they'll have binged it over the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people will be like, what the fuck are they talking about? Why aren't they talking about the whole, all four episodes that we can now watch, Kay?
Yeah. Kay, of course, professional that she has, got up this morning and watched all four, didn't you, Kay? So tell us what
I watched one. and yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks very much, Kay.
Moving on.
I nearly killed Boyd. He nearly choked in his tea.
Wow.
No, because, I mean, it was kind of a ridiculous endeavour because I don't really know the story or understand much of it. But I can tell, like, visually, it's very pleasing.
Did you watch the 4-minute catch-up at the beginning, the previously on Stranger Things?
To be fair, it's helpful, but also, you know, I mean,
yeah,
like,
not that
it's
helpful.
Still confusing. But yes, I watched all, as you say, 1 hour and 11 minutes of it, and I did my homework. And I can see, like, I can see the appeal. I, you know, if I had watched it from the beginning, I would be as excited as you guys.
Did it ever make you want to, or is it just not for you?
No, because I think it's too, you know, sci-fi. You know, it's too,
bit
like...
too much.
It's
bit too much.
It's a bit too much. But
I wondered if the nostalgic 80s-ness of it might get you. Kind of the Amblin-ness of it.
I know. So that's the thing. Like, I kind of say it's too much, but when I was watching it, like the characters, you know, as you say, the period detail, I was like, oh. And I was umming and ahhing, thinking, shall I give this a go? But I just think it's too far down the line. That train is gone. I think. For
me. Admittedly, I would have thought by the time you get up to date, the cultural conversation will have dissipated a little bit.
Oh, it's always dissipated for me.
Yeah.
Now, what would you rather I watch, Game of Thrones or Stranger Things?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly.
So only because there's 70-odd episodes and that amuses me to
James,
make you watch that.
You can't have it all.
That's
so
true.
Yeah. Anyway, did you like it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And do you know what? So I don't get me wrong, I was looking forward to this, but I wasn't excited.
Weren't you?
No.
Soulless monster.
And I rewatched all four seasons of Stranger Things earlier this year.
Oh my God, yeah, I forgot about that.
So
why weren't you excited?
But do you know what? And that's a good question.
Do you know
and
why? Because he likes to be contrarian.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
No, I was looking forward to it, but I wasn't excited. And I think it's because I like Stranger Things a lot, but I don't love Stranger Things. Yeah, like I think it's
but
good.
But why would you binge all four series? Like,
it's been like 15 years since the last season. I couldn't remember a thing. So I was like, and also the first season of Stranger Things is really, really good. So I really wanted to watch the first season, and I was like, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, I'm just going to keep on going. And it is a really good show. Like, I enjoyed it, but I don't love it. Like, for me, it's good, but not great, I've always felt. I don't know quite why it hasn't really resonated with me in that way. But I've always enjoyed it. And then, so I would come into this. I sat down to watch it this morning. I was like, yeah, okay, you know, it's fine. Do you know what? Very quickly.
Talking to himself.
Talking to myself. James, I was like, oh, James, you know, this is good. What do you think?
James, you'll be on parody.
I had my little cup of tea and a little bowl of porridge. And I,
wait a minute, wasn't it? He has tea with honey. Is it the honey?
I do have honey in my tea, yes.
Is it Earl Grey?
No, it's just regular old builder's tea.
Not lemon tea with honey.
Sainsbury's decaffeinated, actually, if you really want to know.
Regular tea with honey, not a lemon element to it.
No, there's no lemon. Mm. I do have lemon and ginger tea. I feel like we're getting sidetracked.
We are.
Yeah, sorry, that's me. Yeah. It's just you were setting the scene up. You were talking to yourself in the morning.
Yeah. And I had my porridge and I had my tea,
you,
right?
Shoving porridge in your mouth.
That's what was happening.
Okay.
And obviously I'm in a state of mild amusement, but not excitement. Okay, that's how I begin.
Mild amusement?
Yes. So I'm like, this is how I'm getting into it. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not excited. And yet, within about 5 minutes, I was just like, put it this way, at no point did I pick up my phone. Like, at no point.
Oh, the storytelling is brilliant, yeah. I mean,
exactly that. Yeah, but I don't know why. There was something about this, and maybe it is because they're slightly older, because the dynamics have changed, because it feels that there's progression. Perhaps because there's a real edge to this one from the beginning, because it picks up, if not in media res, it does pick up off the back of season four, and a lot of shit has gone down. And I found this particular, the first episode, incredibly compelling, and it builds to a climax, which is shocking and graphic and gory and showcases, first of all, how far the effects have come since season one, because, you know, there are demogorgons in this and they look, you know, very different. Well, not like super different, but like they look certainly more sophisticated than they did in season one. And I was really into this. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. And it made me so excited for the rest of the season. So having now watched the first episode and 8 minutes, I am now properly excited for the
Wait,
rest
so
of it.
Wait, so are you loving it now?
Yes.
Okay, so God, what an emotional rollercoaster.
Right, So I've gone from pleased to see it, but otherwise unmoved, to properly excited from having now watched this. So, because I spoke to a lot of people, I say a lot of people, one person, and that person...
You're such a doofus.
The one person I spoke to said that
was that your own reflection, by the way?
No, okay, it was fine. A separate human.
All right.
And they said that they had given up on Stranger Things because they got bored during season three, which I think is mad, because season three is great.
Season three?
Yeah.
Season in the mall and everything.
Yeah, that's the mall.
Oh, I love that season.
Yeah, exactly.
I was on set for that season.
Of course you were.
Yeah, this is partly why I really love the show.
It's the Starcourt Mall. And it's a really good one. It's the second season I understand people getting bored in.
Where's it filmed? Atlanta?
Yeah.
Jammy sword.
Yeah. That was Terry. That was Terry White.
For Pilot TV print magazine, wasn't it?
Yeah, Pilot TV was. People may not know. Some people may not know. It was a brilliant print magazine, which was...
It was.
Because it was so good.
And we did one issue.
Expensive. Just one.
No.
Well, one on its own, and then it became a little magazine supplement within Empire.
Exactly,
for a while.
Yeah.
So a collector's item, I'm hearing.
Yes, very much so.
Absolute collector's item, yeah. But yeah, no, Terry sent me to Atlanta for the international...
What a swizz.
...press trip. And it was fucking amazing. Yeah, and I got to, particularly in the mall, which was an actual it was a mall that had gone to rack and ruin, basically been left, as there are loads in America that you often get tragic small towns would have unused malls. And it was one of those. And they completely transformed it into this 80s place. And I got to watch.
Now, is that
11
feature available
stuff.
To read anywhere?
I don't think we ever, I think like, well, I mean,
yeah,
it's
in the magazine.
It's in the magazine.
Not online.
No, I don't think so, yeah. No. But I do feel, because I interviewed them all for that feature, pretty much, that, you know, so it's partly my love for the show is definitely...
That's fair.
...multiplied by that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was history, which I thought was great. But this one, again, one person I spoke to, said they'd given up. I was saying, if anyone has given up for whatever reason, definitely go back, because it's worth it.
If nothing else, you've heard the emotional journey we've been with, with James on this, and he's come around to the point of loving it. So you might also be one of those people who changed their opinion.
Definitely, People will. People will follow the James path.
I think so.
Not too closely, hopefully.
No.
Right. Okay. That is Stranger Things, which is screaming now on the Netflix.
I think it's also going to be in cinemas on New Year's.
Oh, is it?
That's a good
fact. The finale is going to be in cinemas.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, I think they said that at the premiere. Yeah, people will flock to see it.
They will.
Indeed.
Next up this week, we have Russell T. Davies' new Hooniverse spin-off, which is a miniseries on BBC One called The War Between the Land and the Sea. And this stars Russell Tovey and Gugu Mbatha-Raw and features the return of the Sea Devils. Boydie, sadly, is of course in the flipper of Big Sea Devil, so cannot impartially talk about this, being close personal friends with both Russells. In fact, we're all kind of like we're all in the pocket of Big Russell, but
we're all butterflies.
We are. We're all butterflies in Russell's. Yeah. I don't know, what do they keep butterflies in? Anyway, whatever. But Kay and I are consummate professionals, so we will attempt to carry this. Said no one. Kay, tell me about the war between the land and the sea.
Okay, buckle up. I've got a lot of things to say about this.
Okay.
Yes. So, as you've said, like James and I, like that was my first time of meeting Russell, by the way, at the live pod.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And what a delightful man he is. So I really like him. So this has coloured, obviously, my opinion, maybe, because, you know, when you've met someone or you know someone or whatever, like you just naturally have a propensity to like whatever they produce. However, right, so when I was watching this...
Some of us are professionals, Kay, but you carry on.
Yeah, no, I'm not, I'm not that person. I do get influenced by if someone, yeah. Anyways, when this first like was playing out and I was like, okay, cool, I liked it anyway because Russell Tovey, it's, you know, he's this character who is an everyman and he finds himself kind of on this mission that he didn't sign up for, he's unqualified for, and he's very much out of his depth. And it kind of explores, his name's Barclay, and it explores his dynamic with his ex and his child, which I really enjoy because, you know, I'm very like, love the relationship elements of dramas. And then when the sea creatures appeared, I was like, okay, one appeared. I was like, okay, I can handle this. And then more, like there's loads appearing. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe this isn't really for me, my kind of show.
Hey,
right?
But Doctor Who is one of your favourite shows, so. Mm.
I enjoyed the episode we watched, James. I know you can't believe it. Anyway, so I was like, oh, maybe like this is just maybe not my kind of show, even though I enjoy the Russell Tovey elements and et cetera, as in meaning it might be really super sci-fi and like whatever. I don't know what happened, right? Because towards the end of this first episode, I mean, I was enjoying it for the storytelling, of course, anyway, but I was like, I got sucked in such a way. Like, I texted Boy because I really wanted to talk about it instantly. And obviously, James, you'll be happy to hear he shut me down. And
yes,
said,
rightly so.
Yeah. I was like, please, I just need to talk to you about it. Because I don't know what happened, but I was just sucked in by the storytelling, yeah, but it's more than that. Like in the Boyd had said to us yesterday after our record, he said, "Make sure you watch episode 2." Did you watch episode 2, James?
I did.
I was going to watch it anyway because at the end of 1, I felt compelled to anyway. But you know, had the Boyd's voice ringing in my ears, it's probably that contributed to the tinnitus I'm experiencing.
Oh God, sorry.
And I'm so happy I did, right? Because it is fantastic and it just really grabs. I was captivated by the whole thing, right? Because not only is it spectacular to look at, and there's an element, so the humans are meeting with the fish people, I'm calling them.
Sea devils.
The sea devils.
And, or Homo aqua.
Yeah, Homo aqua. And it's done in the way that the meeting is facilitated physically. It's just very fascinating to me. And I love that, the spectacle of it. And all the, James has zoned out by looking at me and it's terrifying, just so you know. And, you know, things that happen in that episode, which I won't spoil, it's so extraordinary to look at. The money is on the screen, you can see it. And part of me was like, Boyd, you'll know this, and it's a really kind of basic question, I'm sure, but like, when Russell's writing this stuff, does he draw images of what these creatures are going to look like? Because how does that all, you know, like...
Well, these creatures go back to, in Doctor Who lore, so they were first seen in 1972.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're old monsters that he has revived. And they've been slightly redesigned, but I think he would liaise with the designers and to come up with the look, yeah.
I didn't know the connection. I mean, the Doctor is mentioned, of course, but like I didn't realise it was, throwback, apologies.
Yes, yeah, so it's a Doctor Who. It's set in the Doctor Who universe without the Doctor. Is kind of the key. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he uses a lot. So the Sea Devils from Doctor Who, UNIT, you know, the led by Gemma Rego's character, Kate, they're from Doctor Who. Yeah. Yes. So those are the elements that are in Doctor Who.
So what's interesting is I could sense the connection, but I did, because I hadn't read around it. And actually, what I love about this is I'm not a Whovian, right? As you know.
Yeah.
But this feels like a show for me because I got stuck into the storytelling and the characters, and I'm going to talk a bit more about that. But I didn't. I felt I was included, right? Because I'm at the beginning. It felt like I was at the beginning of the journey with this, rather than trying to play catch up or like left behind because I don't have that. You know, I'm not aware of the rich history of Doctor Who. So yeah, the character called Salt, right? Now I'm going to say something that you're going to love because I sound like a massive nincompoop, but I know that Gugu's in this, right?
Right.
But when I was watching it, because I was watching this character called Salt, who's the leader of the sea, what do you call the
sea devils?
The Homo Aqua. And I was looking at this character, I was like, oh my God, they're so mesmerizing. Like they're beautiful. Just couldn't, and the connection between the Salt and the ambassador, I just find really compelling. Like halfway through the second episode, I was like, "Oh my god, it's Gugu! What an idiot!"
Yeah.
I didn't.
She's under heavy prosthetic, to be fair.
Yeah,
she is. Yeah,
but,
and also just, blue.
Yes,
and just mesmerizing. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I think the reason why I loved it particularly is because RTD is delivering a message here. It's not subtle. It's like this is what humans are doing to the to our natural environment, to the planet, to the seas. It's got to stop. And he just like is so forceful and passionate about it. And I love that because not all storytelling needs to be loaded with those kind of social messages, political messages, etc. But when done well, and he does it with, you know, real creativity and flair, it can be really impactful. And I think this is going to be impactful. And I also like the fact, sorry, as you can tell, I've been bottling this all up.
Mm.
I really like the fact that, you know, that he's gone there. He's used his power, his storytelling to, you know, do this. And I really love that there's going to be a section of viewers who get up in arms, you know, certain types of viewers who are like, oh, his woke agenda and shoving it down our throats. Yes, because it should be shoved down our throats. And it's done in a really entertaining, compelling way. So, yes, I loved it. I wish I had more of my preview screeners because I could have watched another three or four episodes.
That's brilliant, yeah. I mean, I think that's so good to hear because part of the whole point of what he was trying to do was create a show where you didn't have to be a Doctor Who. You can watch it if you've never watched Doctor Who at all.
Mm.
You'll get a little bit more out of it if you have watched Doctor Who and you're aware of the history of Sea Devils and all that, but not a tiny little amount. And there's a couple of references to the Doctor in it. But it's very much its own story. And as you say, he is dramatising the environmental disaster that's happening. And one of the main reasons I wanted you to see episode two as well, because the finale mm-hmm. of episode two is this, they call it the plastic apocalypse,
no spoilers.
Don't spoil it.
Right. No spoilers.
All right, I'll leave it there.
Boy,
but it is
spoiler-rific.
Honestly, we should have stopped in there, can't
Yeah.
We?
Thanks.
Extraordinary.
But it is an unbelievably spectacular sequence. Brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm.
And very practical. Practical effects rather than CGI. And it's just beautifully done. I think this is the most visually impressive thing of Doctor Who ever. Mm-hmm. Literally ever. I mean, production values have gone up. James always takes the piss out of
it. Is this Disney money?
Yeah, this is there's a lot of Disney.
The last bit of Disney money.
Yeah, this is the last bit of Disney money. Although, in fact, of course, they filmed this, I don't know, maybe a year ago, I think. Yeah, so this has still got Disney money in it. But it feels like it's got more Disney money in it than, you know, per episode than the regular Doctor Who did. I just think it looks incredible. I visited the set as well, and that huge big indoor space, you know, where all of the politicians gather and they welcome.
Love that.
Yeah, that's all that big. It is huge.
Really?
Yeah, none of it is CGI. There's no volume. I remember saying to the producer, because James is obsessed with this thing called the volume that is overused by particularly like fantasy sci-fi shows where everything's on a digital screen effectively or digital. And Doctor Who's used the volume quite a lot in itself, but this doesn't. It's
so the water
at all.
Element, is that all?
Well, the water CGI.
There wasn't
a gigantic tank of water.
Disney dollar does go fast.
Yeah, but all those big spaces and the space where the UNIT team led by Gemma Rego's character gather, and that's all also, that's within the bigger set. Mm-hmm. It's just spectacular. It was just spectacular just walking into it. You know how actors often say when they're talking about real sets that are built and they're not just pretending, they're looking at a green screen and they bang on about how it helps their performance. I actually believe it because it is so incredible to walk into this huge space.
And you get that sense via the character of Russell Tovey's character,
right.
Who I, by the way, I love him anyway, right?
Yeah.
Got a bit of a soft spot for him. And he's so good in this. And he's the, like, he is us.
Yeah.
He's the viewer.
He's the
obviously.
Everyman.
He's
yeah.
the everyman.
Absolutely.
He is the everyman, Boyd. But what I would say is, and I'm going to say something about his physicality to even it up with Gugu, because obviously I was like saying how beautiful she is. And Russell is a very handsome gentleman. And he is so hench. That's the only aspect of him.
It
that is not every man.
Actually, right? Distracting.
Yeah,
at times. Genuinely distracting to me. I was
he
like,
looked like he should have been in the army. Though,
I was
you know,
like,
the unit.
He's been hitting the gym hard.
I mean, he's always in the gym anyway. He's
good
he
for
loves
him.
The gym.
I mean, good for
well,
us.
You can tell
it's
him.
Not new.
It's paid off because,
yeah.
like, and that suit was extremely well tailored.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought that.
Let me tell you, without spoiling anything, you get to see a lot more of him in future episodes.
Boys, you know what I say to you? Bring it on.
There's a lot of sea action in the sea that he did himself because he loves swimming in the sea, and there's a lot of coming to terms with water, shall we
yeah.
say? And
but
all
great
of that.
Character,
but yeah,
Barclay.
He is a brilliant character. I also think this is one of his best performances ever, if not his best performance ever, because he gets to do everything in this. Mm-hmm. He gets to emote. He gets to be quite funny, Riley funny, as he is literally like the guy. Do you remember I compared it to on the news when the guy who was like a driver ended up being interviewed on BBC News instead of the person
yeah.
he was driving to the studio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he just sat there, this guy, and they carried on asking him questions mm-hmm. about this news story that he had no idea about because he's just a driver. And in this, he's just the man who books the cars.
Yeah.
And it's such a funny, brilliant idea that Russell came up with for that.
But also, can I just say one thing? Sorry to interrupt. Mm. Something really amusing is the fury of the guy who actually
yeah.
was meant to be.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I love that.
That name,
it's so funny.
Which is a really complicated name. This was discussed at the Q&A, by the way, that T. Davis came up with a really difficult name for Russell Tovey to say, whose place he was taking, yeah, in the scheme of things. But I think, yeah, that... that's such a great idea because it does make you watch the whole thing unfold before your eyes through his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a brilliant shot where she says, "I want that guy there
yeah.
to deal with him," and the camera honed does a massive zoom in on him, and that's just a brilliant moment. So I think, but what he has to deal with when he's dealing with his family and this and he ends up having to basically being in the position of saving the world,
mm-hmm.
effectively. It's just brilliantly done. Everyone in it is great. And it just goes places you may well not expect as well in the subsequent three episodes that are fabulous. Like, there's all kinds of genres. You can't narrow it down to... It's not just sci-fi. It's got fantasy. It's got romance.
That's what surprises me, Boyd, yeah. right? James, like, can you imagine my shock watching this? And like I said, at first it was like, you know, oh, is it because I just love RTD? You know, and I really love the Tovey storyline. But for all that other stuff to happen, which I won't ruin, and me to be like... even more compelled. I was like, oh my God, get it in my eyeballs. I was genuinely, I'm so surprised at my reaction
fantastic.
To it.
Now,
that's why I texted
Now just
Boyd.
To bring us all down, we have to find out what James thinks.
Well, Boydie. But I mean, look, it's safe to say I have had a mixed history with Doctor Who as a franchise.
Yes.
Very much enjoyed the Shooty Gutwa.
Oh yeah, you did, to be fair.
Ones,
yeah.
Especially the early bottle episodes from the first Shooty Gutwa season where, like, the 73 yards, 74? I can't remember the number.
I think it's 73.
Something and a half.
Genius. Just to say, the guy who directed this.
Right, okay.
All
Dot
and
Bubble,
episodes.
All that sort of stuff. Really enjoyed all of those. So I enjoy those kind of standalone ones almost more than the mythology ones, actually, which was true of the X-Files as well. So coming into this, I was apprehensive, especially because I was like, war between the land and the sea, I don't know anything about sea devils, whatever. So, you know, and yet, surprisingly, early on in this, I was just like, I'm enjoying this a lot more than I thought
I
would.
Yes, James.
And it got to the point where when you get to, I mean, it's not a courtroom drama, but it has a similar vibe to that. When you get to this, the sort of the, let's call it a summit, when you get the summit between the land and the sea, these very pointed discussions, I really enjoyed that. And I think it's a combination of facts. I think partly it's quite, I like the themes that they're talking about. I love the way that you know, it's being put together. These are quite, as you say, the environmental agenda, I think, is kind of very cogently put together and very powerfully conveyed. But there's something inherently enjoyable about watching someone who feels out of his depth and isn't qualified, having to do a thing, but then going off script and just speaking from the heart. And it's quite, there's an elation that you feel every time he goes off script and does his own thing. You're like, God, you fucking tell him, Barclay.
Yeah.
And Yeah, it's great. And Boydie was like, you must watch the second one as well. I was like, very similar to you, I could not stop watching it. And I
want more though.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this so much more than I thought I would.
I think you've identified it. That was the moment in the first episode that then I just got sucked in. And it was like what you're describing as, you know, the summit.
Yeah.
That was the turning point. I was like, oh my God, this is really like interesting and like create. Like, I just love it. The innovative.
It's a great setup, but I think also you've got two really compelling performances in that. I think both Russell and Gugu are really quite just overwhelmingly charismatic in those roles. And there's a lot of emotional nuance to it. I really, really enjoyed all that stuff. When it moves away from those scenes, you know, the family stuff, it fleshes it out more. But for me, like the juice, what I really wanted was that confrontation between the two of them. Like any scene where it's Gugu and Russell talking to each other, I was like, I cannot take my eyes off it. It's...
Last thing, because I will stop banging on about it, the other detail I love about Gugu and all of the fish people, the sea devils, the ears. You know, they're delicate when they start going backwards.
They're like gills, right?
Little
head fins.
Of course, the gills, not the ears.
They're more fins.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a brilliantly designed prosthetic. Yeah, I'm thrilled that you like it. And there's loads more of them.
The other thing I was going to say is that this feels... Now, someone told me that Torchwood did this once, well, like a mini-series that feels more adult than mainstream Who. And this, for me, felt pitched slightly older in age or slightly less universal in theme than regular Who. And obviously that, you know, given that I'm quite sneery and superior and all of those things. Yeah. So genuinely...
So I
very much appreciate that. Like but it still has that, you know, Whovian playfulness to it. What I have previously described as silly, I will admit that. But there is a playfulness. So just the very fact that they call them Homo Aqua, do you know what I mean? Like there's an accessibility and a playfulness to it. So that's still familiar. Like it's not like it doesn't have Who's DNA. Like you feel the DNA in it. But it feels like... It's like Who After Dark, do you know what I mean? It's like Baywatch Nights. Yeah. Like it feels like it's Who, but it's that little bit closer to the watershed.
But it's still family friendly.
No pun intended. Yeah, sorry, water joke.
Well, I think, no, you're right. It is deliberately. It's. I think the way Russell T. Davies is putting it, he wants everyone to enjoy it who may not have thought of watching Doctor Who. But Torchwood was effectively a prime time adult friendly thing set in the universe of Doctor Who. But I think this is, and some of it was great. There was a Miracle Day, I think was the most recent one, which was in 2011. And they definitely did kind of tackle really interesting ideas and issues, and they felt more grounded in reality than regular Who, perhaps. And this feels like, but I think this is a massive step on and step up and step whatever.
What time is this going out?
So this, I was going to mention that. So the scheduling is really interesting. It's at 8:30. So they're showing two episodes, 8:30, 9:15. So it's 8:30 to 10. So it goes into prime time, into the after the watershed. And they're showing the first two episodes and then the next two the following week. And then the finale, which is pretty much an hour, I think, on the 21st.
I also like the third week.
Yeah, and it's five. And they're not putting them all out in one go. But you get to see them all just before Christmas, if you want to save them.
Can we see them earlier, Boyd? That's the crucial thing.
I think so, yeah. I've seen them all, so yeah.
Of course you have.
Yeah. And it does get, by the way, it gets better and better and better. So, and the ending is phenomenal. There's bits of it that are just classic Russell T. Day. He co-wrote it with a guy called Peter McTighe, by the way, you should credit. And he did the second episode. So he did a really good job there. And the director, who I mentioned, Dylan Holmes-Williams, who did 73 Yards, is absolutely brilliant. I mean, what he does, I don't know what... It looks big budget, right? I mean, you of all people, you're very snooty when it comes to things
looking
cheap.
Snooty
and gooty. No, and I think the whole thing looks really, like, impressive. It's quality all the way through. And I think huge kudos for that should go to the director.
Yeah, I think you've got a huge kudos should go to the money people at Disney funneling tons of cash into this series.
Russell for getting the money from Disney in the first place. Yeah, but it's brilliant. Yeah, I'm delighted that you. It's not just me.
Yeah,
yeah.
The War Between the Land and the Sea. Then,
so it starts this Sunday. Yeah, the 7th, 8:30, BBC One.
Okay. Finally, this week we have Spartacus: House of Asher on MGM Plus, which I can tell from Kay's expression she thoroughly enjoyed. This is a belated part sequel, part reboot of Spartacus Blood and Sand, which aired in 2010. And it's actually had a number of different incarnations. So just to give you some background, if you're not aware, but Spartacus Blood and Sand started in 2010. The lead who played Spartacus, Andy Whitfield, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer while they were making the show. So season 2 of this became this sort of standalone prequel series called Spartacus Gods of the Arena with different characters. And then very sadly, Andy Whitfield passed away, and so they recast Liam McIntyre as Spartacus, and he continued for the next two seasons, which were Spartacus Vengeance and Spartacus War of the Damned, where he led this sort of slave rebellion against Rome, and it was a whole thing. Now, madly, House of Usher, and as Lucy Lawless is kind enough to return from the underworld to explain to us in a very helpful prologue, is a weird retcon, and stay with me on this, where Nick E. Taraby's character, Usher, did not, in fact, help Spartacus lead a rebellion, which, of course, he did, but instead stopped said rebellion by killing him with a spear. So this is like a weird, multiversal fever dream, alternate history, retcon, reboot, whatever you want to call it, where it's altered history, and it sees Usher take over the House of Batiatus, which was John Hannah's character, and become Dominus of this gladiator school, effectively putting us back where the show very much began in 2010. So it's a really, really fucking weird conceit. Now, for those of you who have never seen a Spartacus, these are ostensibly Roman period dramas, but really, these are shows that specialise in three Bs. Blood, boobs, and balls. And let me tell you, all three of those things are in aplenty in this particular show. But Boydie, tell us, does this receive from you a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Well, I'm glad you explained the whole history of the show, because I remember watching the first season of the first series.
I didn't watch all of it. I watched the first two seasons, but when Spartacus was recast, I don't think I ever watched.
I'm the same. Yeah. I'm the same. But I remember the first season, and I remember quite clearly how preposterous it was, and how a lot of it was just who's the Scottish actor from season one who you mentioned?
Yes, which is Andy Whitfield.
And the whole setup of being like this gladiator school and the guy kind of them training them. And
Jai Courtney's in there with his knob out.
And then after doing some fighting with each other, they then retire to the shower area or the cleaning area and just be completely naked with all their dicks.
This is presented in 3D Willy Vision.
Exactly. And then you'd be there'd be random sex scenes between the slave owning guy and his various female partners. And they'd be incredibly gratuitous. Sexy and full of nudity.
Yeah.
And there'd be loads of copious amounts. Everyone would be fucking this, fucking that, and calling each other C words left, right, and center. It's like a festival. And because it was on Stars, the channel was called Stars with a Z, and Stars Play was the British the European version. Yeah. And the speciality of this channel, Kay, was adult oriented.
Boobs and blood.
But stuff, boobs, blood, dicks.
Yeah,
swearing,
you name it. Full frontal
violence,
galore.
Gore.
Yeah.
Limbs
being hacked off. The whole thing is like an exercise in reviving that tone from the original series created by it. I have to say, the brilliantly named Stephen
DeKnight.
DeKnight is such a brilliant name. It could only be the creator of this ludicrous show. And now you've got this Nick E. Taraby playing the character.
Who's a returning character.
Yeah, a returning character who is completely ridiculous and over the top and demented. The whole show is fucking nuts. But this particular thing, it just looks and feels exactly like the very first episode that I remember watching.
Yes. Well, it's essentially just reset the timeline.
Like, it's just kind of like remake. It's like a remake.
It's wild. It's a mad sequel and also a complete remake. Yeah. It's deranged.
It's deranged. Mm. And sure enough, but the funniest bit, there's some brilliant bits where he's having sex with, he's having sex with two women in the first 5 seconds.
Greedy.
And then there's another sex scene with him. And then there is this brilliant bit where all of the fighters,
the gladiators gather.
Oh, yeah.
They have a big confab in the bath.
Which I've renamed Cockfest 2025.
I mean, it is. Yeah. It's peens aplenty.
The show's trying to outdo The White Lotus, Euphoria.
Oh, it succeeded.
Articles to be written about the proliferation of penises.
Also, not credit where credit's due, they are all significantly endowed.
Well, except of course, I think that there's a lot of prosthetics going on. And in fact, in the titles, there was prosthetic design. I'm like, I know what he was doing.
That's the cock man.
The cock man. But it is.
The cock man cometh.
That's right.
But it is utterly shit.
The thing is, you've hit on something which I had forgotten that Spartacus did when I first saw it. They use They all speak in English, but they use Latin syntax. So their word order is really weird. And they
swearing
miss out
at the same time.
Yeah. So they drop in fucks and shits and cocks, literally. But they also, they lose the definite article and the indefinite article completely. So it's like, I come to podcast to spit. And so they'd miss out key words in the sentence.
Yeah.
There are no thes. There are no a's. They don't tend to use you's. They just use the exact kind of like sentence structure that you would have if you were speaking actual Latin. And it's really fucking confusing.
Yeah.
So instead of saying thank you, they just go gratitude.
Then they go gratitude. Then they go, but you're all a bunch of fucking cunts.
That is the confusion.
But you all cunts. Like they wouldn't actually put in the
gratitude caucus.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, I don't think it's as consistent as that. I think they veer away.
I was trying to work out, and they do, but I think it's class related.
Felt
like as you go up the echelons in class, that the more Roman ones who would be speaking Latin, they're the ones who do it.
Right.
Whereas the peasant class who are speaking fuck knows what, they don't seem to do it as much, but it is inconsistent, definitely.
I think it's deliberate.
I mean, this thing, my summary is this is wild. It's wild, it's confusing. It's like I said, Cockfest 2025. I was just like, I was sitting there just thinking to myself, what am I watching?
What am I watching? Penises, Kate. You were watching penises.
But it was just insane. It's insanity. But I like, listen, if this is your bag,
I had to watch this on the Northern Line. Could I just say
this? You can't watch it in public.
I thought you can't be watching this on Twitter.
And also, my iPad is massive as well.
So I was trying to show off.
Yeah, that's
true.
First of all, his sword, now his iPad.
I was having to angle it away from the people next to me. I was thinking, I must look like such a pervert.
You watching this in public.
Because it's so porny. And I was like, oh, God. And genuinely, when the second we cut to the bar scene, I was like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no avoiding this.
You're that guy that people go into their office and go, oh my God, this guy in the Northern Line?
It's just watching porn.
Yeah.
To give it credit, it's a bit, Ryan Murphy in the sense that, you know, it is quite aware of how ridiculous.
Yes, it is. It's
aware of how ridiculously over the top and stupid and basic and gratuitous. This is Spartacus. This is the definition of gratuitous sex, violence, gore, and swearing.
Yeah.
It's literally the whole point of it. The whole point of this show is not to recreate a historical time and educate us in the world of the gladiator. It is to show us tits, arse, knobs, and swearing.
And lots of blood.
My favourite bit that summed up the whole tone of this show was, in early on when there's a scene where they're public gathering, there's thousands gathering, watching them fighting each other, and women show their tits and show their boobs.
It's like a Mexican wave at the top.
We have to fit in gratuitous even into this sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It is hilariously stupid.
Yeah. There's also a moment where there's a very unsavoury celebration of a victory. I won't go into it, but I was like, okay.
Yeah, which also involves a prosthetic penis. So
I wouldn't want to speculate, but I was just like, why do I have to let
quite
this?
Quite a show for
why
prosthetics.
Do I have to watch? Yeah,
it's full on. It's just insane.
But it's insane.
And it's funny
that
it's on MGM Plus, by the way. MGM Plus is now the show that has Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, okay.
And what was the one I did? Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
Which is now finished, to be fair. And now they've got this like Spartacus spin-off thing. It's like they're just doing blokes who are famous and mythic from history, and we just throw swearing and nudity and sex into the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's their raison d'etre.
I think I'd rather take the prosthetics of the Sea Devils.
Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah.
Well. Well, Spartacus House of Asher then, which lands on MGM Plus.
Are you going to ask me?
I am going to ask you, Boydie, yes.
God.
Come on, Boyd.
I picked up the wrong issue.
Oh, unbelievable. He's got one job. He doesn't know what it is. Fine. It is Saturday, the 6th of December, MGM Plus.
Oh, yeah, their show starts on Saturday, which is quite unusual in the world of streaming services. Yes.
Okay, what is our pick of the... Oh, no, we go through the other things, don't we? What we missed here. What else is on?
The copy of his magazine.
Yeah, okay,
so the aforementioned, The Abandons, which we know
that's
now...
That's right, which we're doing a pilot plus.
On the Flicks.
The
showrunner...
The Abandons.
That's on the Flicks on Thursday.
Yeah. Talamasca, which we couldn't get screeners for, that dropped today, Monday, December the 1st, on Netflix, which is the next instalment in the Anne Riceyverse. So it's connected to Interview the Vampire and the Mayfair Witches.
Oh, right.
It's about the kind of secret order of of supernatural.
James seems to be the only person watching all of these shows. And he's the only person who seems to know that this show was coming to
Netflix. Apparently, I am.
Because it's not in any of the Netflix
things. No, but it is.
Things.
And it is there today, I promise you.
Okay, well, I believe
it's on
you.
His kitchen calendar circled.
Yeah, even if you've got the dates for the.
Hey.
Let's not go there again.
I just did it.
I can show you anyway. Did anyone watch Mammoth series one? Did you watch Mammoth?
No, I didn't, but I've watched the first episode
of
the second series. Yeah.
It's a fun show. It's on BBC Two today at 10 o'clock. It's like about a guy who comes back. He's been frozen in time in the 70s and he comes back.
Documentary,
James,
is it?
James would call it silly.
It's silly. It is silly. It's silly. Unashamedly
silly.
It's
gently
silly.
Amusing.
But Mike Bubbins is in it and he creates it and he's very funny, I think. What else is there? Sorry, I'm flicking through. Oh, A Knock at the Door. This is the play for today you were talking about earlier. You
check
reviewed.
It out.
That's on Thursday at 9 o'clock. The one with Alan Davis. There's a thing. Oh, Say Nothing. Do you remember the big IRA historical drama, which was brilliant?
Yeah.
And that is getting a Channel 4 screening from today, Monday, at 9 o'clock. They're showing the whole thing over the next few weeks, which is a very good thing. Now, The Hunt I'm looking at here was supposed
Rhyming
to be
slang?
On. Apple TV. No, this is a
yes, that's right.
French TV drama, but they've removed it.
Mm.
They're not letting it
alleged
go out
plagiarism.
Because allegations of plagiarism. We should have covered that in news. That was a news story. Yeah.
Meanwhile, The Savant still hasn't aired.
Savant still, yeah. Mm. They should put on Savant instead because that controversy.
Oh,
surely,
yeah, they hit pause on that.
Yeah, they did.
Portrait Artist of the Year final. That's your thing.
Thank you,
that
Boydo.
Was on Wednesday, and that's about it, I think.
Okay, picks of the week.
Sea Devils.
The War Between the Land and the Sea.
It's a very long title is all I would say.
It
that's my only
title.
Bit of feedback, but yeah, that's my pick.
I loved it. It would be between that and Stranger Things for me. I'm trying to put them on a level, if I'm honest with you.
Always be honest.
Always be honest.
Yeah, probably same, but I'm going to single out The War Between, as I'm calling it.
Good stuff. All right, well, that's it for this week's show. Very exciting stuff. We'll be back in your ears next week, obviously. But before then, please do subscribe to Pilot Plus and buy a subscription for people you love and people you hate. Mm-hmm. Really, everyone. Buy them for everyone in your life.
Indeed.
empire.supportingcast.fm. And please leave us a 5-star review on whatever platform you so choose. That would be great. If you want to write it as a poem, that is fine, but don't feel that you have to. On next week's show, I don't know what we'll be covering, but it might involve Dark Winds, possibly season 3, which comes to you in Alibi. Percy Jackson returns to Disney Plus.
No.
Kay is shaking her head. Man vs. Baby comes back to Netflix. No,
your
I'm
favorite
shaking
Rolex.
My head.
Rolex,
I mean, look, I think we can, like, there's lots of stuff. The Revenge
week.
Club comes to Paramount
yes,
Plus.
Yes, I want
to
watch that.
Irish Blood comes to Sky Witness. But look, let's be honest, there is a big show this week and we will be covering it because it is the most important thing. It airs on Friday the 12th December and it is the first episode of Taylor Swift, The End of an Era on Disney Plus.
God.
Come on!
I predict I'm going to be terribly unwell.
Yeah.
I won't be able to attend the recording. I'm
yes,
sorry.
Yes, indeed.
It's going to be great.
Yes.
We should, you know what, we should just dedicate the whole show to it. Just
with
cover that.
Suddenly we're reviewing a documentary, maybe. You know,
oh yeah, suddenly it's allowed. Yeah. The dictatorship
it's
allowed.
More than a documentary. It's a cultural milestone.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. I cannot. I'm embarrassed for you saying those words out loud.
Yeah.
But anyway, before we wrap up, can we just wish Boyd very good luck for tonight?
Yes.
Thanks.
Boydie.
Well, by the time this,
by the time
out,
this goes out,
you'll
Boyd
know
will,
that the news yeah. statesman guy has won. For his
but you are winner.
As voted for by people. Yes. Thank you.
You'll always be our columnist of the year, Boydie.
He's thanks. Our Boydo of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, having said that, if we're talking columnist of the year, that guy from House of Asher was probably a contender.
Ooh.
Very good.
Steady.
And on that note, Pilot out.